to episode 413 of Awards Daily's Water Cooler Podcast. I'm your host, Clarence Moy, and I am joined by the other two M's. So M's, let's go around the cooler and tell the listeners who you are and where they can find you on the internet. Joey, we'll start with you.
Hi, I'm Joey Moser. You can find me on Twitter at JoeyMoser83.
Megan.
Hi, I'm Megan McLaughlin. You can find me on Twitter at HeyDudeMeg.
And again, I am Clarence Moy. You can find me on Twitter at Clarence Moy. And I, yes, indeed do rummage to fruition.
What? Okay, was that from Succession? Is that the line? What line was that?
It was.
Which
that was,
line
that
was?
I was saying when Cousin Greg told Tom that they were like, you know, had their hands on each other's.
Oh, yes. Okay, yes, yes.
Rummaging.
Yes.
Did you rummage to fruition?
Oh, right. Yes, that was a good line.
And the best part of it, we're going to talk about Succession, but the best part of that scene is the fact that Greg pumped it up to be, you know, they actually had sex in the bedroom, and really they just jerked each other off essentially.
Right. I thought that was so funny because I was like, wow, that's not what I expected from Greg. And then it was like, okay, that's exactly what I expected from Greg.
I want Succession to end much in the same way that Game of Thrones did, with Cousin Greg in charge of Royko.
I 100% agree that that's actually what I was thinking too. I totally want that to happen.
Yeah, because then everyone else would be like, oh my God, a spinoff. Let's do it. I need
it. That's such a good impression of film Twitter.
That is the voice accurate. Of film Twitter.
All right. So as you can guess, we are here this week with an abbreviated podcast. Sorry we're late. Recording, we'll explain in a minute. But we're going to, with a short podcast, talk about Succession, which obviously premiered last Sunday night, to record ratings for the series and to a lot of online conversation that we're going to suss through today. And of course, we'll close everything with a flash forward to the media we're most anticipating in the upcoming week. But before we do that, I do want to sort of stop for a second and say why we're recording late. And it is because, as I mentioned last week, I got to do something very unexpectedly, got to do something to sort of cross off a bucket list item. And it was to go to Pixar in Emeryville, California, which is a suburb of San Francisco, and to watch 30 minutes of their upcoming studio release, Elemental, which will be in theaters on June 16th, preceded by the final Ed Asner Carl Fredrickson cartoon, Carl's Date, through which I did see and ugly cried at the end of, because it's incredibly touching. And, you know, that it's just it's closing a door. I don't usually get sad with celebrity deaths, but this, and I wasn't, you know, I kind of had to Google whether or not he had actually passed, but knowing that that was the last time that we're sort of closing a door on something that has been very close to my family and with my kids and their relationship to their grandfather, you know, it was a touching moment, and it's a very good short. So I don't know that it can win an Oscar, but it is a very good short.
Well, I think it's funny that, well, not weird, but I knew Ed Asner had passed away because it was like three Mary Tyler Moore people died in 2021. It was
right, Betty White.
Murray, Betty White, and him. And he had said, after the actor who played Murray, it's escaping me, Gavin McLeod, after Gavin McLeod died, he said, I'll see you soon, buddy. Like he knew he was going, and it was so like, oh my God. And then he passed away, and I loved Ed Asner. What a great actor. I look forward to seeing that short. And can you say anything about what Elemental is about?
Yes, I can. So there is a trailer out. I will say, apparently, I've not seen the full trailer. I kind of watched
I haven't clips. Seen it yet.
Apparently, Film Twitter did not like the trailer because it's not exactly what they expected. And they're looking for much more. I get so frustrated, not because I've seen it and not because I liked what I saw, but because people continue to judge Pixar trailers as if they are adult films. And they're like, oh, yeah, it's so on the nose, blah, blah, blah. I've seen that. I'm like, oh, I don't know. It looks like, you know, their old stuff. These are movies made for children with a flair for adults. And, you know, it operates on two different levels. And the trailers are never the best things about Pixar movies. But anyway, I digress. Elemental is it basically takes place in Elemental City, where there are, imagine New York if there are boroughs of elements living. Not, these are not people on fire. These are not people made of water. These are actually fire and water and earth and air that have taken on kind of humanistic or humanoid shapes. So they live in these boroughs, and they interact with each other, obviously, but it's about the two main characters, Ember and Wade, who basically fall in love, kind of like a little bit of a Romeo and Juliet, or it's more of a romantic comedy, kind of opposites attract kind of thing. It has a lot of subtext about the immigrant experience. It has just a lot going on with it. And I was very impressed with what I saw. The animation, I don't think people will fully understand how difficult this animation is. I think people will just kind of look at it and think, oh, this is fun. This is visually pleasing. Just to consider, and we sat through a couple of panels talking about how they made it, just to consider the fact that some characters are completely made of water. And the fact that you have to be able to see through them, light has to interact with them, then they're constantly in motion. They're not, you know, they leave traces of water as they walk. Their bodies are fluid. Astounding to see the kind of the level of artistry that went into this. And they've always talked about Pixar has always talked about their challenge with water, going back to Finding Nemo. And how every time they do water, it's a little bit different and they learn more. This movie literally could not have been made 5 years ago because the technology didn't exist for it. And the most amazing thing that I learned, and I'll be doing a piece sometime this week on the site talking about some of this, but the most amazing thing that I learned is, you know, these movies are rendered via computer, obviously. So they use computing power to build them and to process the movies. They had like, I don't remember the exact numbers, but let's say 5 for Toy Story, 5 computers rendered that film. And then they go up to WALL-E, they might have had 400, 500. And then if you go to Elemental, they used 151,000 computers to make this movie.
Wow.
Yeah. So, but being at Pixar was super cool.
Yeah, that's awesome. Now it's like totally hitting me. You were at Pixar. Like I knew you went out there, but it's like, oh wow, you were there. Like you went to the mothership.
I will say,
Yeah, I'm surprised you came back actually.
Well, it is an office. It is a cool office, but it is still an office. And what I found really funny is there's a lot of things. There are a lot of things there that are meant to provide entertainment for people. Like there's an Olympic-sized swimming pool. There's a soccer field.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. There's all kinds of game rooms and stuff like that. But looking at the subtext of all of that is people who work there probably work there much more than the 9-to-5 jobs that most of us do have.
Right.
Right? They're there 14, 15, 16 hours a day. And so there's a lot of accommodations there to compensate for that fact. So, you know, it's trade-offs for sure. I did meet Bob Peterson, who is the voice of Doug, and Mr. Ray.
Yes!
And
awesome.
He was there to introduce Carl's date. It was a fun experience. I got to hang out with a lot of really cool people, including Eric Anderson and Joey Magison and Daniel Howitt of Next Best Picture. So we had a lot of conversations, and the movie is really funny. It does definitely operate on the old school Pixar level of two, the kind of a kids type humor and a more adult level where there's some definite serious thematic concerns going on. So again, it comes out June 16th. I saw half an hour. I'm anxiously anticipating seeing the rest sometime in late May to early June.
That's great.
Yeah. So that's why we were late, recorded late. I had to fly back on a red eye. I landed at 4:45 Tuesday morning in Raleigh. And for my day job, I had two meetings with China that night at 8:30 and 9 o'clock. So It was a long day for me.
Oh my goodness.
But yeah, so that was that. And I'm super, super grateful and thankful for the opportunity. Anyway, what did you guys do this weekend?
I'm trying to think of what I did. Joey, you probably had more exciting. I'm trying to think of, I can't remember.
Well, I went to South Carolina for our wedding.
Oh, that's right. Yes.
I went to Folly Beach for my first gay wedding. I knew that we were dealing with some snooty Southern gays when we're like 3 hours into the reception and then no gays were taking off their ties or their jackets. I was like, okay. And none of them went up to get some like food trucks instead of like a sit down sort of dinner, which was kind of fun. I've never done that before. And I was like, they're not going near the cake truck. So I went to the cake truck a couple of times. Yeah, it was fun. I've never been to like a beachy sort of town, and it was confirmed that it was sort of, you know, sweaty and everything kind of smelled like stale cigarettes, but it was fine. It was good. This is a growth. This is the first time the second flight back was the first time on a plane where I didn't feel like I was going to have a complete nervous breakdown.
That's progress.
Yeah. Who knows if that'll continue? We'll see.
Excellent. Megan, you do anything exciting?
I didn't have much of anything. I played a hockey game on Friday night, and the other team loaded their team with ringers, and they really, really killed us on the ice. And this one guy kept trying to hit me, so I tripped him, and yeah. I was very happy about it. So don't mess with me on the ice.
Don't mess with you anywhere. All right. Succession premiered last Sunday night. Again, as we mentioned, it had record ratings for the series. I think just on Sunday night alone, it was over 2 million views. So did Yellow Jackets, by the way. Yellow Jackets was the largest Showtime premiere in 10 years, I think somebody said.
Wow.
So that's good. I haven't heard too much of, I mean, I know a lot of people watched and love Yellow Jackets. I'm just waiting for this weekend. I'm waiting for next Sunday night.
I am too.
I just
want I've seen some people in the message boards that I'm in, people are debating like, will they or won't they go there? But most everybody seems pretty pleased with the first episode. And, Candace Frederick wrote an interesting piece today for the Huffington Post she took a little stance of kind of critiquing it. She likes this new season, but she critiqued it a little bit about how it has so many characters and stuff, which I appreciated reading that. And I would suggest people read it. For the most part, I've seen people, and she's somebody who didn't really like the first season. So I do think that the second episode will divide people, but I also think it's going to unite people too.
Yeah, I rewatched episode 2 today. I rewatched episode 2 and 3 because I realized that I still have 3 other episodes and I want to watch them, but I wanted to rewatch the last 2 episodes. And a friend was with me and they liked the show and they were freaking out.
It's a freaky episode.
Yeah, it's good.
It comes in hot in the second. Like I'm surprised wasn't something they ended the season. You know, like I don't know, you could have if you really wanted to drag things out, you could. But they don't, so
yeah, no, they definitely don't do that. Anyway, so let's let people watch that this weekend and they can come back and comment as to what they thought about Yellow Jackets season 2, specifically the ending. But Succession again premiered. Joey, why don't you orient us as to where we are with Succession and lead us into the conversation?
Cool. So essentially what happened, I mean, if people remember the end of the third season, you know, we sort of get the emotional reaction from Tom, I keep saying the word betrayal for his wife, but I mean, getting back at Shiv for, you know, stuff going on in their lives. And season four kicks off with Kendall, Shiv, and Roman trying to figure out how they can, you know, do a rival pitch against Royko as they sort of pick up the pieces. And Shiv and Tom I think their dynamic is so interesting because they are, you know, dealing with this crumbling marriage where he's starting to do things where he's, you know, seen out in public with what's his name? I'm blanking on his name. Kendall's ex.
Naomi.
And thank you. And she, you know, Shiv sort of goes on a spiral. So I think a lot of maybe audiences were kind of reacting to that. And then, you know, we get to see Cherry Jones again. And, you know, they actually start taking their rival pitch seriously. And it's probably one of the first times or the first time that we get to see Brian Cox's character really, you know,
vulnerable.
Yeah.
Yeah. He loses.
He's like served with, you know, a real reality check, you know, like, you know, the king's crown is starting to tilt off the side of his head. And there's also there's a lot of really great stuff in there with like cousin Greg and the girl that he brought to the party. And she's got this humongous purse, and every time someone goes up to her or goes up to Greg, they're just like, who the fuck is this girl? Like, are you sure that she can be, you know, vetted and stuff like that, because they're trying to do the election. And their other brothers desperately trying to hold on to 1% in election and is maybe gonna spend $100 million. I don't know. I really like the episode. I thought it sort of hit the ground running. Knowing that it is the final season and this is the first premiere felt really exciting to me, even though that I am a little critical of, you know, Succession just running the same lap over and over again, even though it's enjoyable as fuck. So that's where I sat with it. But I thought it was a great way to start the final season.
I have a question for you. So you said with your description that you thought that Tom betrayed Shiv on purpose. Do you think he did it to get back at her? Do you think he did it to get back at her?
I mean, I don't know, but I mean, I think that I honestly need to rewatch that last episode.
Oh, I was just wondering, because I thought that he did it as like a power play, like showed her, hey, I'm a man.
I don't think the shit that happened in their marriage, I don't think that is entirely out of it. I don't think you can leave that aspect of their personal relationship out of it. Because she's been in the driver's seat with everything for so long, and he's sort of her little bitch boy.
But he had to have known doing that was going to implode his marriage. That's the only thing that I don't know.
He doesn't, I don't think that he thinks there's anything left there to save almost. Like, just, she destroys everything.
That's true.
He has sort of, because she is so beautifully acted with her by Sarah Snook, there are a lot of times where I watch her, maybe more her out of any of the other characters. It's like, I don't know anything that's coming out of her mouth. What is the truth? What is a lie? I don't know. Because she's so engaging as a character, but she's also so duplicitous, and she's also so, I don't think that he could come at that power play just out of strictly a business move. No way. I don't think that's possible for him.
Interesting. I was just wondering. Clarence, what did you think?
I thought it was a very good hour of television that evolved into something great. And I think what I found really interesting with that episode is that it very quickly, to me, the most interesting part of the show are not necessarily the boardroom shenanigans that do happen. It is the relationship between Tom and Shiv. It is complex. It is different. It is complicated. It's not something that we can easily predict. I mean, you know, they do close the episode with an extended 5-10 minute sequence between the two of them. where they're discussing what to do with their marriage, and they settle on one course, but then the episode closes with something that suggests that maybe it's not headed in that direction. I don't know. It's really interesting.
What did you think? I thought that this was them, us getting to say goodbye to them as a couple.
Probably. It probably does end down the divorce, because honestly, Shiv is, I think she's hurt and too practical. I think he's a bit more emotional, and she is the one that will close that door emotionally. I don't think she can open herself up to any kind of reconciliation, even though she's the one that had the affair, early on in the series.
Although I think his betrayal of her was bigger in some way, because it was her family. I don't know. I mean, she, don't get me wrong, she did a lot of, they're both did big betrayals, but I think she was caught off guard. But not that I'm excusing her having an affair. I think what she did to him, and after, like, hey, we're married, let's have an open marriage, was cruel and horrible. But I also think she views that as less than of what he did to her by going behind her back with her dad.
Yes.
I think also I don't necessarily know that she expected for him to even have the balls to do that.
Yeah.
I think that
you would think she'd be turned on by him. If it were Arrested Development, Lindsay would have been turned on by Tobias for doing that.
You're not wrong.
Let's just redo all of Succession, but have it the exact same scripts, but the entire Arrested Development.
Oh, I love that idea.
That'd be amazing.
The other thing that I found really compelling about this show was the whole series has been about, obviously, the title, right? Who is the next in command? And we have seen Logan in different states and mental and physical states. And in this one, for the first time in a long time, he feels the most out of control. Not out of control in terms of crazy, but out of control in terms of he's no longer competitive. His age really started to show in this episode. And I don't know if that's intentional, if that's just my read into it, but I've really felt like more so now than when he was peeing in the corner in the first episode of the series, he just feels very old to me.
And I wonder if it's because he doesn't have the kids there. Cause that was such a great, like, seeing him mill about his party looking for them was kind of heartbreaking. He almost looks lost.
Yes.
Almost like they keep him yelling at them and keeps him young. But I get what you're saying. That's he does seem to, he looks just like another, like rich old white guy who is losing his power. And you could see he probably felt that way too.
Yeah. I mean, he does, through the episode, he just try to reach out or through his personal
assistant. I love that.
Lover.
Friend slash advisor.
Yeah. He tries to reach out through her and there's all this back and forth, you know, through the broken children that they are because of his parenting. They negotiate whether or not they should talk to him. And of course they decide not to. And then he finds out that they have won the deal with what I assume to be a bid that they would probably put them into some kind of stress to actually follow through with. I wasn't entirely clear that they could negotiate the funding for a $10 billion purchase of Nan's company.
Would have to be if once they still have 2 days left on their, before they can cash out their Royco stuff. Right. So that's what it would be. That would be like the caveat for it or something, right? And, well, T seems to think it'll work. So if T thinks it'll work, it should be fine.
T being the financial advisor that Roman loves to eviscerate verbally over the phone.
What about the 100? I kind of want to know what that is. Do we have any idea what the 100 is?
I don't think we do.
It felt like the Huffington Post or something like that. I don't know. Maybe it's just me.
Yeah.
It just seemed like some sort of vanity journalism project or something. I don't
know. Someone says, Yeah, Esquire has an article. What is the 100? The Succession Kids Media Hellscape Explained.
That said, I think we've, you know, it's funny. I was like, oh, here comes Cherry Jones ready to win her next Emmy for a guest appearance on Succession.
Yeah, she was good. I mean, I was surprised that the Pierces would even want to deal with them again. That was kind of a nice little callback. Mm-hmm.
It is. It was a nice callback. And you know, Cherry Jones is always great. I don't mean to
downplay. No, I know what you mean. Contributions, yeah.
But it's just funny that, you know. I love
she coughs and gets a nomination.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I love that they call this the Munsters. This episode, the Munsters.
Yes, yeah. I did too. Right. I also loved Naomi's new haircut, which was like part Meg Ryan, part Anne Heche. I totally loved it.
I would also say I feel like this fourth season could be positioning Brian Cox to be the Emmy frontrunner and best mm-hmm. actor.
I was thinking that too. Especially in that scene with, is it Scott, the buddy he goes out with, the driver?
Oh my God, that scene is so good.
Yeah, and he's at the diner. He's like, do you think there's anything after this? Like, and you could see, he's like, you're my best pal. And you could see he's kind of like,
what?
You don't want to be his friend. You don't want him, like, public knowledge to be Logan Roy's best friend. I also
how did he walk in there without any cameras following?
That's I kept wondering. I was like, where are they that no one?
Yeah.
The bodyguard is Colin.
Colin. Okay, thank you.
I just had
I don't know why I thought his name was Scott.
That's the actor's name that plays him.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah, that was a great scene. And I think you know, one thing that I over the series, of course, Brian Cox is always great, but one of the things that I not complain about or criticize, but one of the things that issues I have with his performance is that he is always angry Logan. He's either been angry Logan or he's been crazy Logan. And there's been very little shading or nuance to it. Right. But this they wrote him a part in this episode that gave him so much shading and nuance where he was actually able to show a longing that against his logic, a longing for the kids. And I hope that they do explore, and I have not seen the rest of the season yet, but I hope they explore this realization that he has created these monsters, you know, that he has unleashed these children out into the world that are completely of his own doing and he can't control them.
Yeah.
That would be something I think that would be pretty compelling to explore, but we'll see what happens with the rest of the season. I think watching this first episode and seeing the adoration for it, both with the critics and through viewers, it is locked and loaded for that drama series Emmy.
Oh, for sure. Yeah, for sure.
What I think is, and I'm probably going to write about this for the site this week, what I think is really interesting is what they'll do with Sarah Snook. I have long said that, and we have all long said that they should probably put her in lead actress. If nothing more than to give J. Smith Cameron the opportunity to shine a little bit more in her supporting role. But, you know, I've always felt that Shiv, particularly in the last season, wasn't supporting anyone. She was her own character. She was her own. She had her own trajectory. And I felt that she was the female lead of the show.
I also felt like J. Smith Cameron wasn't in it as much last season.
No, she wasn't. Yeah. And she really wasn't in this episode that much either.
Yeah.
I do hope that they, you know, it's the last go around, like give her something meaty.
Mm-hmm.
Well, they've kind of completely abandoned that that Roman relationship with Roman. Yeah.
Yeah.
But I did love that callback to the text that Roman said his dad.
Yes. Oh, I love that.
So we'll see. I mean, what do you guys think about Sarah Snook competing in lead actress versus supporting?
Well, I only want her to stay in supporting because I want Melanie Lynskey to have a clearer path. But I think she's still, so far I would say, based on what I've seen and what they're doing, she's supporting. I would still argue that, I don't know, I always felt like this was kind of Kendall's show. I don't know why, but who knows? Maybe it'll change my mind. But so far I'm still in the supporting camp.
Yeah, I mean, we'd have to see where the rest of the season goes, but I feel like she had, at least in this episode, she had more power than Kendall did.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I actually wonder if HBO is smart, they would put Sarah Snook in lead just think of how many, they would have one person from Succession with J. Smith Cameron, you know, as the obvious choice for supporting actress, but they could fill out the rest of the category with women from The White Lotus. So if they were smart, they would probably bump Sarah Snook to lead anyway to help the show and also their probably final count later. Because I actually feel like Sarah Snook, she always just felt like a lead to me in the show. Like if you think of who is the female lead of Succession, it's obviously Shiv, even if her part is not, you know, it's not Kendall Roy, but you know, I don't know.
Yeah, no. Sorry, what?
Then be strategic, HBO.
Well, they usually are, and I think that's a great point about the supporting cast of White Lotus. Because I do want, you know, the obvious choice there is Aubrey Plaza and Jennifer Coolidge, but I really want Megan Faye to get a nomination for that very complex and wonderful performance. Not to bring any shade to the other two actresses, but she just, you know, had such a meaty and difficult role, I think. Anyway. So, another question for you both. Does Matthew McFadyen repeat supporting actor?
Nomination? Or win?
Win. Oh, he's definitely
getting a nomination. Definitely a nomination, yeah. I don't know.
I feel like the natural instinct with Succession is for Kieran Culkin to win.
Yeah, I feel like this could be his... He's been good, too. He's been more, like... You could see him... Almost like a little kid in this episode.
Yeah,
like
you could see the
child dynamics in this episode of how things probably went down when they were kids and how he's like, oh, I don't know. Like, I always think of him as the youngest, even though he's not.
Yeah.
Who is the youngest?
Shiv.
I think it's just the Culkin of a...
Okay.
Assuming he's a child. But I think that, may, and this may sound like really over-analytical, but it's just sort of like, maybe Kieran Culkin winning for this type of part is more of a Golden Globes type thing, but people love that character. Yeah, I guess it depends on how much weight they give to Roman this season, because I feel like the reason why Matthew McFadyen won last year is because you were so drawn into what he did at the end. You walk away from that third season being like, fuck, Tom, what did he do? Like, holy shit.
Yeah.
And I think
that great scene between them the night before that all went down too.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I the whole time I was watching this first episode, I was just like, okay, so Matthew McFadyen has an Emmy. Jeremy Strong has an Emmy. I was like, could they get everyone else in the Roy family and Emmy this last time? Brian Cox, Sarah Snook, and I mean, I guess I'm not counting the other Roy, but I don't really like that Roy, so it's fine. And they give Roman one too. Maybe they'll take three of them. Who knows? Stranger Things have happened. Fair boy.
Well, I definitely think Brian Cox is better positioned than Jeremy Strong at this point. But you know, again, it's early going. We've only seen one episode, but I was extraordinarily impressed by this episode and anxiously await the second.
Me too.
You Do you guys feel like you're just sitting there, like, the whole time I was also watching, I was like, how are they going to end the show? How are they going to end the show? Maybe somebody just goes in while they're all there and they're arguing about who's going to be in charge and somebody just blows up the building. Who knows?
I heard it takes some pretty dramatic steps this season.
I was like, someone's going to die, right? I feel like someone has to die. But I guess that's another topic for another podcast.
I still think it would have been great if they would have killed Kendall off.
Oh, like drowning in a pool.
Yeah. Yeah. I know Claire, I always remember how Claire and I were convinced that was going to happen.
Yeah.
Well, I wouldn't be surprised if they do pull some kind of shock and Logan doesn't die at the end of the show. He dies somewhere in the middle of the season. And the
I was wondering of, about that too. Yeah. And they don't have a successor. Yeah.
Right. And then the rest of the show is the kids tearing each other apart.
Yeah.
And cousin Greg.
That'd be interesting.
Landing on his feet.
Yeah.
Yes.
A girl with giant purse. What if he has all of his children killed and then he has a heart attack and then no one knows what to do with the empire? Everyone dies. That's what I want. I want a red wedding situation with no. I want the show to have no resolution.
Look, you throwing out that Game of Thrones reference to an episode you never saw.
I was just going to say that too, Clarence.
I've seen the red wedding episode. Have I seen the rest of the series? No.
Okay.
Tossing that language around like you know what you're talking about.
It's part of pop culture. It's not just a show. Shut up. Take you down.
All right. Anything else about Succession?
No.
Sorry, it's back.
Obviously, we will be following through with the show straight through the next, 10 episodes until we get to the ending? Somewhere in the beginning of June, I would assume. All right. Let's move on to the flash forward to the media we're most anticipating the upcoming week. And Megan, go first.
So I am watching Reservation Dogs. So I'm catching up on season 2 and, it really is a lovely little show. Then I'm also trying to catch up to Poker Face, another lovely little show. It has such a strange tone where I'm always like the first 20 minutes I feel like is like, okay, there's no Charlie Kale in this, Natasha Lyonne. And then she shows up. She's so good. She's so good on it. And I just do love watching her like solve the mystery. It scratches some sort of weird itch that I never knew TV could do, that like you're watching it in real time and you know what happens. So I'm catching up on those. I finished Chuck Klosterman's book, The 90s, and now I'm reading Nancy Grace's book, Don't Be a Victim, which if you want to be frightened by all of the different ways that your children can be kidnapped or you can be kidnapped at the mall, I'm going down that rabbit hole. I told my mother that I was reading it and she's like, good, I want you to be reading things like this. I'm like, great. Because I think she always thinks I'm going to be a victim. Because she always buys me mace every year for Christmas. So, but I'm reading that and I listened to new Jenny Lewis Psycho's song today. Came out on Spotify. I am really excited for her new album coming out soon. And then I think that's about it. Some other shows that look I might want to check out are The Power on Prime Video. It's Toni Collette's in that, I believe. I heard stuff about this when I was at the SCAD TV festival. So that sounds kind of interesting. And then I guess that's probably about it. Just catching up on other things. And I think everybody should check out the podcast, Hey Dude, the 90s called. I've been catching up on it. It's with David Lasher and Christine Taylor from Hey Dude, my favorite show. And I just caught up to the White Squall episode where David Lasher was in that movie and directed by Ridley Scott. And so he had like Ryan Phillippe on the cast and Ethan Embry, Jeff Bridges showed up for the podcast, but Baltazar Getty. It was just a really interesting conversation. And I've never seen White Squall, so I would really like to see that one.
Very good. Joey.
I want to catch up with Poker Face. I have screeners to Beef. I want to watch that. I am in the middle of watching Tiny Beautiful Things. with Catherine Hahn. I'm going to be writing a review of that. It's a very emotional show. I'm, you know, Catherine Hahn can do no wrong, in my opinion. She's really good at it. It's sort of really sad, but also very funny at the same time. I just got screeners for the first 5 episodes of the other 2. How I have controlled myself, so I'm going to sit down and just watch it, you know, with the attention that I think it deserves. One of my favorite shows ever, even though it has only its 2 seasons so far. And I've been going very slowly through the new season of The Marvelous Mrs. Maisel. Everyone is annoyed by now how much I love the show. I am very impressed with how confidently this season is directed, and it's doing a lot of really interesting things that I was not expecting for a show, for this show to do. The show, I think, has gotten, you know, the reputation of being this like super bright, super bubbly, fluffy, cupcakey thing, and it's taking the promise of its lead character very, very seriously. So I'm super excited to keep going through those. That's it.
Excellent. I have, for the past 6 months or so, I have been making fun of the Dungeons and Dragons trailer because I thought it looked like total, complete garbage, and I felt bad for Chris Pine for being in it. What's that?
And it wore you down?
No, the reviews came in, and the reviews are very good.
Mm-hmm.
So it must have the right balance of tongue-in-cheekness, knowing what it is, and you know, between a fantasy action film and it's sort of a parody of itself. I haven't decided if I'm going to go to see it, but I'm more interested in it than I thought I'd be. I need to catch up to Tetris, which drops on Apple TV on Friday. I have been continuing, as I was traveling, I continued my rewatch of random older movies. I caught, on the way out to California, I watched The King's Speech on the plane. And looking at it, what is this, 2010? So this is 13 years after it won the Oscar for Best Picture and for Best Director. I am more incensed than ever that this film won Best Picture and Best Director. Colin Firth, great. He's very good in this. I don't begrudge him his Oscar. Even the script, I can say, you know, it balances all this material very nicely. And I remembered the screenwriter was, you know, himself struggled with stuttering as a child and put a lot of that personal material into the script. So fine. This movie does not stand the test of time the way that The Social Network does. Social Network feels like today, even after a rewatch within the past 2 years, it felt like it was a brand new movie. It's that urgent. It's that timelessly made, I would argue. And the fact that, that King's Speech won director over The Social Network. Fine. If you want to do Best Picture, I understand the Harvey of it all. But the fact that Social Network did not win Best Director for David Fincher is kind of a crime, in my opinion. But
for the movie that makes you feel.
Yeah, but for the movie that makes you feel, right. Because there is nothing that is done in that film that you can point to and say, oh, that's a Tom Hooper film. But every frame of The Social Network feels like a David Fincher film. So anyway, I also have started, I've gotten about 3/4 of the way through All About Eve. And I don't know. It's good.
It's hard. I love All About Eve. I remember loving it. It's been a while since I've seen it though.
I mean, it's the first time I've ever seen it. So you approach this knowing that it got nominated for 14 Oscars and, you know, it was a close runner up for actress, and Bette Davis is excellent in it. I'm not going to take that away from her. And the script is funny I don't know. It's just, it's not clicking with me personally, but that's okay. Obviously I don't need to weigh in on it because it's a classic film. Sometimes I can overlook the acting style of the 40s and 50s. And sometimes
I was going to say, I know that bothers you. Yeah. You don't like old movies.
This one in particular, all of the dialogue delivery just was like, you're a famous actress and I love you and you're a star to the stage and screen, and old women never get old. They just get, the way that it's not, that it's just dialogue that is very stagey and read and not felt. She manages to, and this is probably a testament to her performance, I think she feels every word of that script, and she gives a modern performance in a film that is surrounded by actors who are very of the time, if that makes any sense.
Yeah.
But I need to finish that. I just ran out of time. I also want to catch up to, I have a lot of screeners, but I'm still catching up to shows that have been out for a long time, including Shrinking. So that's one thing I'm going to try to watch. And then I have not settled on a new book yet. I did finish How to Sell a Haunted House, and it was a very fun read. So I enjoyed the whole thing. Can't wait for them to make this into a movie. With all those puppets.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Yeah.
Yeah. It's a lot of puppets. I think it just feels like a Cracker Jack of a movie. So hopefully they make it. It's a Cracker Jack of a movie. It's talking about
the Cracker Jack, I say.
Maybe we should option the book and write the screenplay. Because I mean, it's just such a perfect movie. It you could do so much with it. I mean, it just feels like a Blumhouse project ready to in the wings. All right, does that cover it?
Yeah.
All right, let's get the hell out of here. So we are the 3 M's, contributors Joey Moser, Megan McLaughlin, and me, Clarence Moy. Thanking you for joining us, asking you to remember to rate us on Apple Podcasts and also subscribe to our YouTube channel at Awards Daily, and wishing you a very pleasant tomorrow.